T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Joining us on the line, Dr. John Selleck, an epidemiologist with Kaleida Health, the VA here in Western New York as well, talking about a number of issues that we're seeing with COVID and vaccinations throughout the country. Dr. Selleck, thanks as always for being with us this morning. I want to start with what's getting a lot of attention, that is the death of Colin Powell. Powell died, it was said, due to complications due to COVID, and he was also fully vaccinated. Dr. Selleck, he was also 84 and has had, you know, several health problems in the recent past. Do you look at this at all as an indictment on vaccinations, or is it maybe just a mere reminder that, you know, a vaccination doesn't make you, you know, bulletproof or deathproof to anything?
Thanks for having me again. No, I think your comment is correct. This is not an indictment of vaccination at all. It does remind us that vaccines do not give us, as you say, a Superman suit that protects you from everything. If you look at the data that CDC just published about a week ago, with about 188 million people in the United States fully vaccinated, there are a total of about 7,000 deaths due to breakthrough infections and about 25,000 hospitalizations due to breakthrough infections. So that is a tiny fraction of a percent of the total number of people who are vaccinated. You know, the vaccines were meant to keep us out of the hospital and out of the morgue. They still do that very well. And as you point out with General Powell, he was 84 years old. He had multiple myeloma. Now, I obviously have no direct knowledge of his medical record, but had multiple myeloma, which is a malignancy of the blood cells. And we know that these are people who, even though they respond to vaccine, they don't respond quite as well as normal people respond to vaccines. So, you know, it's unfortunate to see with all of the incredible things that this man did that the headline often includes a comment about vaccination. And I think it's pretty much irrelevant. I think that the vaccines continue to do what they set out to do and do it very well.
And age is also a factor here, right? Even if someone is vaccinated.
Unfortunately, Susan, when I throw all this stuff around about age groups, I'm in one of those age groups. So it's a certain amount of, personal observation to me. But our immune systems do undergo changes as we get older. And we know that with most diseases in general, but from what we're talking about, infectious diseases, that they tend to disproportionately affect the older. And it's on a timeline that is a curve rather than a straight line. So especially once you get to about that 85-year-old area, the risk of death and severe outcomes from infections actually starts to go up pretty considerably. So, I think unfortunate that we lost such a stellar individual, but, none of this is really beyond what we would expect.
It's, you know, maybe I kind of think of this as a case of, you know, our brains get kind of warped due to the last year and COVID, and we kind of forget, you know, what normal life was like before this and how it worked. I saw this quote from Dr. Ashish Shah over at Brown University, and I thought it was like kind of like an eye-opening moment maybe for a lot of people. It's such a simple thing, but to see it stated, he said, vaccines turn COVID into a mild disease, but mild infections can kill vulnerable people, as, you know, we've known for many years and years, but it's almost like we need a reminder of that.
You know, I think that's a very good point, because, you know, we've become so accustomed with so many things in American medicine that, you know, almost like a, you know, we can fix anything. And the reality is we can't fix everything, you know, and he's, you know, he's correct. We've seen this with influenza for years, that, you know, the death rates and the hospitalization rates are much higher in vulnerable populations, the elderly, people who are on immunosuppressive drug therapy, people who have multiple underlying medical conditions. So COVID is really falling in line with that. It, we're going to be relying on vaccines again to keep the majority of us out of the hospital and again prevent us from dying. But, you know, we're not going to be able to make anything go away because by and large, we see even diseases like measles that we've had tremendous, ability to greatly decrease the number of cases and the number of severe outcomes from measles, like measles encephalitis. When we get into these stretches where we get these populations of people who are not vaccinated, then we see that come back. I mean, it's pretty much clockwork now. Every 5 to 10 years nationwide, we see a surge in measles, which we really thought, you know, was largely gone and should be gone. But, you know, we sometimes allow things to come back. And as Dr. Jha points out, excuse me, in the right person, anything can happen, unfortunately.
You know, when it comes to boosters, Dr. Selleck, we're expecting a final decision soon for Moderna and J&J, and there seems to be some confusion about the J&J booster. Do you think that the decision will be that it would be better for people who receive that vaccine to get a different booster, like Pfizer or Moderna?
That's a very good question. I think that what we've, the data, you know, we're in that 6 to 8 month range now after people, 6 to 8 to 10 month range after we started doing widespread vaccination, again, a little bit shorter for the J&J, that, you know, we have data coming at us in a torrent right now. And I think the one thing that has become apparent is that when you go back to the beginning this year, that a single dose of J&J worked better than a single dose of either the BioNTech Pfizer or Moderna. But we now know that clearly the second dose of the Pfizer Moderna does much better than that single dose of the J&J. So clearly, J&J people are going to need a second dose. Everybody is going to need a second dose. And I think we will. The CDC Advisory Committee meets tomorrow and Thursday. So I expect by dinner time on Thursday, we're going to have a firm set of recommendations that will get signed off on. Now, there is the one study, not a huge study, a few hundred people, that showed that maybe if the people who got the single J&J got one of the mRNA vaccines, that they get a better antibody response. And that may well be true, but I think that, the way I look at this is that the most important thing is that people who got the J&J vaccine get another dose of vaccine, and that's everyone once this is, put into operation, because clearly that's what's needed to, again, get back to that. We want to keep you out of the hospital. We want to keep you out of the morgue. And that's what's going to happen. And the other The other piece of all of this with the vaccine boosters, and you're right, we're going to see the recommendations for the Moderna vaccine as well, is even though they don't prevent all infections, they do prevent a lot of infections, and they, again, some data that they keep the amount of virus in your respiratory tract lower. So this will also help prevent spread to all of the vulnerable people that we've talked about, the elderly who may not respond, cancer patients, people getting the drugs for rheumatoid arthritis and Crohn's disease and all of these other things that impair our immune response.
You know, when you say that everybody needing a booster, I feel like we still haven't really addressed the big question of what we're supposed to expect vaccines to do and what the end goal of vaccines are. Because we're still hearing, and unless something has drastically changed, that it's, you know, vaccinated people and, you know, those who have gotten one dose of J&J or just the two doses, those are the vaccinated people, are the ones who are not being hospitalized at big numbers. They're not dying from the disease unless you are significantly older and have other health problems, like in the case of Colin Powell. So if it's still working in that regard, I mean, wouldn't we be fine without a booster shot? I mean, why do we need an additional shot of the vaccine if, you know, to the extent of it's stopping people from dying, that's remained true?
Yeah, this has been I've not been able to listen to all of it, but I have, all of the FDA Advisory Committee and CDC Advisory Committee meetings are being conducted electronically now, and anybody can go to the website and hit the link and actually listen to the meeting. And there was quite a bit of discussion with this, with the Pfizer vaccine, in terms of do we really need to do this right now? And the things that I would say with this is we have to keep it in perspective that we've only known about this virus now, really good information for well under 2 years, we're just going to need time to see how things play out. But I think one of the things that we started to see is, again, more at the upper end of ages, I don't know who I'm roping in on this, but people over the age of 60, that you started to see a little bit of divergence in the line where the number of hospitalizations has started to go up a bit. So you're put into a situation where you say, well, is that always going to be the case, that it's just going to be a little bit higher for that group, or are these lines going to continue to diverge? And as time goes by, then we're going to see a larger group of these people get hospitalized. And obviously, it puts you in the damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situation, because if you don't make the move, excuse me, to either get the highest risk people boosted, and then it turns out that things do get much worse, then everybody's going to say, well, how come you didn't give us a booster? And then, if we do the booster and, the curves go back to looking the way we want them to look, then you're going to say, well, gee, maybe we didn't need the booster. So there's really no perfect answer here. But I think that for the third doses of the mRNA vaccines have played out, which is for people who are at highest risk, either because of their age, their underlying diseases, or the kind of jobs that they do, I think that's a very reasonable, adaptive ongoing approach. And then we'll be able to see with time what winds up happening in terms of whether or not everyone needs a booster. And again, with the J&J, I think that's a little bit different case, because that probably should have been a two-dose vaccine to begin with. Everybody was so anxious to get vaccines out in the early part of the year that their numbers looked pretty good with one dose. So everybody said, well, this is perfect. And there's certainly, only about 8% of the 188 million people vaccinated in the U.S. are vaccinated with the J&J, but there absolutely some groups of people where this has been very useful. The people that we, the underserved people that we have a hard time getting to, people who are mobile, a number of other situations where, that was useful to do that. But it's pretty clear that, like most of our other vaccines, we don't have that many vaccines where we only give up a single dose. I think that people who got the J&J, you're going to see the recommendation by the end of this week that everybody with a J&J should get their second dose. In essence, is what that booster is what we're going to have.
What if you've had COVID before and then you got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? Are we also now going to recommend another round of that vaccine for people who, should have, by all accounts, robust immunity?
Well, I think the answer is probably yes, because, everybody likes to make the presumption that infection with SARS-CoV-2 is like infection with measles virus, that once you've had it, you're immune forever. But the data are actually not completely clear on that. I think that people who've had more significant cases of COVID probably do get a pretty good immune response. People who have milder cases or asymptomatic infection may not have as good immune response. So it becomes very difficult to operationalize that because we don't have an absolute number an absolute metric to say, well, here, if you had this, and this, you're likely to be immune, and if you didn't, you're not. And, of course, we're still struggling with antibody tests because the commercially available antibody tests, we can use them to sometimes help us make a diagnosis, but we don't know when you get that number back. And this is one of the, relatively common questions that I get on a daily basis. My patient had a test done, and it came back 3.41. I have no idea what that number means. I don't know which test it was, what time frame that was done in relationship to a vaccine or an illness or whatever situation. So I think it becomes very difficult, and I think that you're going to continue to see the recommendations for vaccination be done in the absence of specific knowledge about prior COVID infection until we get better direction to tell us that. Now, 5 years from now, we get some data showing that people who had COVID and did not get the vaccine are still doing well with regard to infection, then that maybe will give us a little bit different direction. But for right now, we just don't have enough information to be able to clearly say if you had COVID, you're good to go.
We're speaking with Dr. John Selleck, and I hate to keep you for too much longer, but I think the problem that so many people have when they hear something like that is, how can we say that we don't have enough data? There's been millions and millions of people infected with COVID, something that's been around for over a year and a half now, and we're totally fine with saying, whatever about a vaccine, one dose, and then, kind of being wrong about it, right? If Johnson & Johnson should have been two doses at first, or we need a booster, or it doesn't totally prevent you from spreading or obtaining the virus, and we have no problem saying, something about a vaccine that's been around for 8 months, but we, all of a sudden we can't say something about the disease itself, even though there should be much more data, whether that's anecdotal or clinical, on the disease?
Well, I think that this is the nature of science. Going back to the comment that you made before, talking about Dr. Jha and saying, sometimes you need to be reminded of things. Those of us who work in the hospital are reminded very frequently of the three waves that we had prior and how it completely disrupted us and how much death and destruction there were. So when you look at it from that perspective, you say, yeah, we'd like to have more data, but we need more time for more data. And again, this is a virus that has only been in the human population for less than 2 years now. So we don't have the abundance of data that we've developed over decades, at least decades, in some cases, probably even getting back to, hundreds of years viruses that we know a lot about because we've had them around for a long time. So I think we have to keep it in perspective that, yes, we'd like more data. And again, I think we will, now that we're, again, not quite a year, but into the vaccine era, we will see the, you know, the kind of torrent of data just keep rolling up right now going forward. So I expect that a year from now, 2 years from now, we will have a much better idea of how long the protection from these vaccines lasts, how reliable the protection from an infection might be. But at the moment, we still have to hedge our bets a bit.
Dr. Selleck, thanks for the time. Dr. John Selleck, epidemiologist with Kaleida Health and the VA.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.